You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. The unofficial fifth line of the Leafs.
I think the one thing that's missing, and it's like they're talking about, oh, if you could upgrade that defense. It's not like they need Drew Doughty. They just need a really good defenseman. And yeah, a guy like that Niskanen, who just goes out there, makes passes, he's physical, he can play in a second power play unit, yeah, and he's really effective.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Well, it's been a busy afternoon, and we're really just getting started because Marcellus Wiley's coming up in about 5 minutes. His take on that thrilling Monday nighter. Is that a flash in the pan? Is that what we can expect going forward? Is this going to be college football in the NFL? I mean, the total was 64, which is just a crazy high total.
Isn't that done by the half?
By the end of the third quarter, they had blown past it. Blown past it. And if you bet the under last night,
you got rinsed.
Just retire. I mean, that's because those two teams, those two offenses, watching them perform.
I know, but you've seen that before where some high-powered teams get together, it's a tight game, and defenses show up, and it...
Well, that's why you gamble, right? I mean, who am I kidding? Do you know how many awful bets I've made? But the under, it's just crushing to bet the under. It sucks because the bet can be over so quickly.
Yeah. Like if it's in the second and you're already...
You're already done.
Done.
You're like, great. Good bet. Jeez. Like, that was a great bet. I bet the under and it's already over. But Marcellus will join us. We'll get his take on if Mahomes helped or hurt his MVP case last night. Should Jared Goff be getting some love in terms of the MVP? And Craig Button will be in studio at 6:25. Craig has joined us in studio the past two breaks.
Yeah.
He is chomping at the bit.
Why don't you just stick around?
He's either bored or chomping at the bit or both.
I think it's a combination of both because he's been talking about the Todd McClellan firing all day.
Yeah.
And Ken Hitchcock being hired. The Oilers playing the Sharks tonight. That's the only game going. There's one game going tonight, and of course it's Edmonton.
And of course it's 10:30 too. That's what stinks for people that
actually have a life and need to go to bed and want to get up in the morning.
I think the league should implement a rule that no game should be on the West Coast later than 7 p.m. 7 p.m. has to be 7 p.m. That half an hour is a killer because especially in San Jose, they start at 7:48.
Yeah. Did you not find, though, Jamie, at the 7 o'clock start, you could always find a way to get to the bar wherever you were going?
Yes.
The 7:30 would like kind of, it seemed like...
it's a stretch.
The way I described it, it's stupid, but the half an hour seemed like an hour.
Yes.
The 7 o'clock start, man, you could get on a bird, 2-hour flight, and you could get into a town.
As a player, I liked the 7:30 starts because that was an extra half an hour in the afternoon of sleep.
No.
But as a fan, you're right.
As a fan, it's 7:30 is not 7:30 because there's anthems, there's ceremonies, there's whatever. All of a sudden, it's 7:48. And then, say you have a little bit of a stretched game.
Yeah, which has always been so stupid. Like, soccer is the world sport outside of Canada and the United States, basically. Yeah. Every other country in the world, it is the predominant sport. They start the second it's supposed to start.
Yeah,
they do their anthems. They come out. They stretch. They warm up all before the game starts at 7.
Baseball's pretty dialed in too with start times.
Baseball is very good. Yeah, 7:07. That's the first pitch. You're right. Baseball's good at it too. But maybe we should all take a page out of that. Maybe soccer, the most popular sport in the world. Maybe they maybe they're onto something.
There were some playoff games I think last year in the NHL where it was 7 o'clock start would be 7:37, and it was just crazy.
What's the point? Yeah, what are you doing?
Well, you're screwing the guys on the panel. I know that because you got to come up with material for 37 minutes that you're not supposed to have.
But here's the other thing.
To the panel. Say something.
But
then you got the quizmaster running around losing his mind.
But this is where the world's trending is efficiency. Everyone's attention span is so much shorter because there's something else. You can track Twitter. You can slide over here. You can go online. Like, wouldn't you think if you were a sport, try and make it the easiest fan-friendly sport to watch?
Well, I think baseball is trying to do that, where they're like the visits to the mound. Fewer of them. And less time out there, less time between pitches.
The problem is with baseball, it's a timeless sport.
Right.
You got to get to 27 outs. And it
could go 18 innings, so what the hell is the sense of limiting the
exactly. There's only so much you can do. It could take an hour and a half. It could take 5 hours. Hockey, in the regular season, you know exactly what it's going to be.
Right.
You know, sure, there are going to be some dust-ups where there's more whistles and it can be a little bit different, but again, this is soccer in a nutshell. Soccer, you know exactly how long that game's going to be. You're in and out in like 2 hours.
The two things, and it's easier said than done because I'm sitting in a studio just shooting from the hip, but you try and find a way to make a game 2 hours long from start to finish. Now, I don't know how you do that, but to me, if it's a 7:30 game, or sorry, a 7 o'clock game, be nice, maybe 9:15 then. But drop the puck at 7:03.
Start right at 7. Right at 7. Why not right at 7?
Why can't you do the anthems before then. I'm trying to figure out like how you would do that. But
you do it all before.
But make your sport so that people are locked in right at that hour.
Well, but that's also the problem is people take liberties because they know that the league is taking liberties.
Right.
I experienced it last night. Now, I was in a different spot. I was working, and right. I tried to get down there. I missed the first 7 or 8 minutes of the game. The parkway is a joke and trying to get parking down there and all that stuff. But I drove by the Scotiabank Arena at 7 o'clock, basically.
Yeah.
There's still people walking in because they're like, wow, we still got the anthems and all. If you tell people the puck is dropping at 7.
Yeah.
They'll be there at 6:50.
You have to get there at 6:55.
Yeah.
But if it's
in the building.
The puck is dropping at 7.
I would love that.
It is dropping at 7. I don't care if there's 5 people in the building, the puck is dropping.
Right. People will shape
will adapt.
Exactly.
People will adapt. But if you're like, yeah, it's probably going to start in 15 minutes. Let's go for another beer.
You know what it is? It's movies and the previews.
Exact same thing.
And which is frustrating. But
movies don't start when they say they're supposed to start.
Yeah, and that it just if you tighten stuff like that. The other thing was the schedule. We'll never get the optic schedule where, you know, you're getting a lot of back to backs and you're getting dead teams and that type of stuff. I don't think you'll ever be able to shape it. But say you got a 70 game schedule where you get I believe you'd get better hockey. And then start times.
Just clean
more
up.
More efficiency.
Clean up what you are capable of
what
cleaning
you can control.
Up.
Yeah.
Exactly. Control what you can control. You can control when the game starts.
Yes.
Like, you have control over that.
Yeah.
And it's never made any sense.
Frustrating.
Very frustrating. 54-51. Again, the total was 64. Both these teams blew past that by the end of the third quarter. Both teams individually almost caught it. If you teased... If you, like, picked up 14 points somehow in the total, both teams covered the number last night. It was an incredible spectacle. I had fun. I'm in the business of trying to be entertained. Marcellus Wiley joins us now, our NFL analyst, longtime NFLer, defensive player in the NFL. As a defensive guy, Marcellus, how did you react to that game last night?
I've learned to accept the new NFL for what it is. I don't fight the moment where you're sitting there, your skin's crawling because the points just keep piling up. They just keep adding up. It's a new day, man. And I was sitting there watching the game, with my family, which consisted of my wife, my daughter, my mother-in-law, and they're casual fans at best. And they were tuned in, all in, captivated by what they were seeing. So, by the business model of the NFL, I think they're getting exactly what they want. From the former player perspective, you would like to see a little more contention from the defense, but there still were some great defensive plays made, even in the effort that resulted in 54-51 being the score.
I said that at the top of the show. It was like so exciting, Marcellus. It was almost like too exciting where... I don't know. That even sounds weird, but it was almost like too much, which is bizarre.
It was an action movie with too many great fight scenes.
Yeah, blowing up scenes and whatever. It was just, I don't know. It was weird to describe.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, man. As a DJ, they always, you know, the hit songs, the songs with all the energy, the Pitbull songs, whatever it may be, they tell you not to play those back-to-back for too long because you got to go through ebbs and flows. You got to synthesize the night. You got to go through the highs and the lows so people can feel all the drastic responses. When you just stay consistently high, it almost becomes drowning. It becomes white noise at a time. And it was so much energy coming from the screen and so many points scored that I was just sitting there like a little desensitized. Like, all right, another touchdown. Oh, that was a great touchdown, but still another touchdown. And when you see 14 touchdowns scored within 3 hours, I can understand that feeling, but you know what? Bring it on, brother, because I love me some points. I love salt, and I love sugar. More sugar, please.
That's what we got last night with Marcellus Wiley. Do you think that performance last night helped or hurt Patrick Mahomes' MVP case?
Oh, it certainly hurts. The 6 touchdowns, amazing, but people will focus in on the interceptions and the turnovers, that whole 5 turnovers and you say 3 interceptions. When you're talking about who is he really in the race with, Drew Brees. And Drew Brees is sitting there saying, I don't have more yards than you. I don't have more touchdowns than you. But I have fewer interceptions and I protect the football. So you just added to the argument of why Drew Brees should be the MVP. If there's a tie, if they're anywhere close to each other, Drew Brees is going to win the MVP because of the story, because of the narrative, because he hasn't won it before, despite being one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen. So Patrick Mahomes must distance himself from Drew Brees, not make this close and comparable in terms of numbers. So when you go out there on prime time and you give us 5 turnovers, a Drew Brees chorus is sitting there smiling right now because they know that's the one thing that Drew Brees has over Patrick Mahomes, and he gave them all of that last night.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially as a rookie. I mean, they're graded on a different curve, and you have to be so spectacular. You almost have to be borderline perfect. And the fact that he lost the game, you know, 2 primetime games, big games, at New England, lost, at L.A., lost. I mean, it's a team game, but Mahomes factors into all that. So I do think it hurt him last night. But where does Jared Goff come into play in all this, man? I mean, he was great last night as well. And the Rams, they're probably going to win 14 games.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's not in the conversation, at least tier one. I think in part because him and Todd Gurley's been having a spectacular season, despite not playing great last night, not getting enough touches and impact, but still – they're sharing that experience, so maybe that's taking a little off of the Goff conversation. But Jared Goff has been playing amazing ball. But Patrick Mahomes jumped so far out in front, which is a gift and a curse. The gift is we're starting to talk about you. The curse is we're starting to attack your game earlier than we do the other people who are going to enter that conversation, whether it's Drew Brees, whether it's Jared Goff. There's something in human nature where they build you up, and then they want to bring you down. And Patrick Mahomes is in that stage right now where we're being hypercritical of his game as a second-year player just because he already had the lead in this race. So he has to be very careful because I think his crimes will be judged double compared to other people in this conversation. But Jared Goff, amazing performance. I still don't think he's going to surpass with Patrick Mahomes, even though he beat him last night, and he certainly won't pass Drew Brees, who I think right now has the narrow lead on all of them.
Who cares about that? Is he making a play for Halle Berry? You're out there. What's going on with that?
Oh, man. I mean, respect to Jared Goff and everybody who's in that line, and I'm sure that line is around the corner in terms of people raising their hands. Hey, I'm next. I would love to date Halle Berry, but look, that age gap right there, let's just have fun with the story because hopefully that's all they're going to have fun with is just the story because that is a big gap right there that I just don't see wedding bells at the end of that. So let them have fun and move on.
Yeah, I don't think wedding is necessarily in his sights, but
dude, I don't care how old Halle Berry is. She looks better now than she ever did.
Yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. Believe me. He's you said it, man. The lineup would be around the Hollywood sign trying to get – yeah. At Halle Berry. So, I mean, shooters got to shoot, you know, and Jared
got to shoot, man. Hey, you got the gun for a reason. Got to shoot, man. We all grew up and saw that. We don't need knowing who's shooting.
Right, exactly, with Marcellus Wiley. What do you make of the scheduling where the Bears got flexed to primetime on Sunday night, and now they're playing the early game in Detroit on Thanksgiving, and Trubisky's got a shoulder injury. They think he's going to play. But that's a quick turnaround. What do you expect out of the Bears on Thursday?
Tough one, man. You know, when you talk about weeks like this, there's once again a gift and a curse. The gift is you won't practice this week physically. It's all mental reps. It's all film study. It's all walkthrough. We're just trying to get everything between the ears locked in. Physically, it's all about the healing process. And normally through a regular work week, Thursday is the day you feel normal. Wednesday is tough. We're out there hitting. We're out there practicing. But we don't feel normal. Thursday is the first day when you feel normal and you have a normal workload. That workload is not going to be a practice session. It's going to be a real game experience. So your body can recuperate, but mentally, look, let's talk about the mental fatigue. Let's talk about the exhaustion and the lack of preparation because of the urgency created by playing in such a short span. It does take its toll. It's an effect on players, certainly. But the beauty is, once again, here's the gift. After Thursday, you have nearly a week and a half to kind of get back into a norm and get back and reset yourself. So you got to find the positives in it because it is what it is. No need to fight that fact, that reality. Find the positives, which is you're going to have 5 days of no hitting in practice and then a week and a half to recover from that. They'll make it through.
Yeah, I think they probably will. And they're at the Lions, so they can figure that out, I would think. But
right.
We'll see. It'll be fun. Have a great Thanksgiving, man. We always appreciate you doing this. We'll do it again on Monday.
All right. Talk to you guys. You probably sound 5 pounds fatter next week. And let's look forward to it.
We do look forward to hearing that. Thanks, Marcellus. There's Marcellus Wiley, our TSN NFL analyst from FS1, longtime NFLer. Those Americans, man, they get after it on the whole
tomorrow
weekend.
Tomorrow night, I say it year after year, is the greatest night in America.
Greatest party night.
Yes, because everyone is home from college.
Oh, it's just the turkey dump. That's right. The turkey dump.
There is a lot.
The American turkey dump.
The American turkey dump is going on.
Forgot about that.
But it's just the best bar night. Like, everyone's back, and it's like... It's like the movies, like small town, everyone's back.
Right. Well, and you know what's coming the next day. Your mom or grandmother or something like that are making a feast, and you have the excuse to just lay on the couch, watch football, and eat. It's the perfect hangover. Yeah. Get after Wednesday night, be so hungover, and just sit around the house.
Yeah, the NHL is quiet Thursday, right? There's no game.
Yeah, I don't know if they're playing. I know they play Friday day games. They always play Friday day games.
I thought I saw that the NHL had no games on Thursday.
The Leafs actually are in Carolina tomorrow night, your old stomping grounds, on a Wednesday night before Thanksgiving.
No game scheduled Thursday, November 22nd.
Yeah, so they'll get back after it on Friday.
I would finish the game win, lose, or draw, terrorize the town.
Someone sent me a DM on Instagram, actually, saying he's going down to Carolina for the game and was looking for suggestions.
Try Google, bud. I'm like, what do I? Like, tripresort.com? I don't know.
Well, you didn't live there for a decade?
Go to Sullivan's Restaurant.
There you go.
Is that good?
And then my cigar bar. I got to think of the name.
Okay,
Havana Deluxe. Sullivan's, then walk across the street to Havana Deluxe.
All right. There you go.
See, you just hooked them up. That's
look at
awesome.
You, Mr. Google. Google review, the human Google review. So there's only one game in the NHL tonight as well, and of course it's the Oilers, and everyone's been buzzing about Ken Hitchcock taking over behind the bench, and we were lucky enough to catch up with him earlier. Exclusive one-on-one interview with him.
Little play of it now?
We'll play one, because this is kind of cute. He knows McDavid's an important guy. He's come up with a new nickname for McDavid. He's going to call him The Undertaker. And we asked him, okay, McDavid, Oilers, first game behind the bench in San Jose. What kind of message do you have for the Sharks?
Are you ready? Are you ready to face my Undertaker? Come on down the aisle with your flag waving, with your music playing, and all your little fans standing in their seats.
Play the loud one now.
Please. My Undertaker! We'll destroy you! Oh, yeah!
Watch yourself, Peter DeBoer. Watch yourself, Jumbo Joe Thornton, Eric Carlson, Brent Burns.
Don't touch him.
Martin Jones, because Hitch and The Undertaker are rolling into the Shark Tank tonight.
You know how Willie Desjardins?
Oh, yes!
You know how Willie Desjardins holds the clipboard? Can you imagine if Hitch wheels out with a little urn?
They wheel him out in a coffin before the game.
He sits up.
Okay.
All right, we're going to cash a check in Craig Button next. We're not just putting a quarter in.
Oh, yeah, you got him going.
We are going to put a winning pro line ticket in Craig. because he has so many takes on McClellan out, Hitchcock in, Mike Yeo is out in St. Louis. We'll get his take on the Leafs and how impressive that one win was last night. I mean, they were down 2-0 after the first. They could have just cruised and just said, forget it, we're out. And they stormed back and won that in regulation. It was a great win for the Leafs last night. Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst, in studio next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and up on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVRs. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. Find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca, and subscribe and check us out on iTunes. Every hour of every show up on iTunes. Craig Button is here. In studio. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Brian. I have a question for Jeff.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you watching the Mickelson Woods Friday?
Well, I do have to work. It starts at 3?
3 o'clock, yeah, so... Wait, probably not.
We're on at 4. If it's free, we'll put it on here.
But is it exciting? Is it exciting?
How do you feel about it?
Like,
it's 20 years too late.
Oh.
But it's Phil and it's Tiger. And when Tiger's on TV, people want to watch.
Move the needle.
But it's 20 years too late.
They got to get creative. Like, I know they're going to, and they're going to do, like, get closest to the pin and, you know, put some money down on, like, a 40-foot putt. Can I hit this putt? But...
I think Michael Farber put it best. He said, I think the price for the pay-per-view is $19.99, and that is, in fact, the year they should have done this.
Yeah, it is good. So as you make that comment, what current rivalries, whether they be contests, or remember when they used to have those best athlete contests? Is there current athletes we'd like to see do it right now instead of waiting 15, 20 years? Maybe that should be a question for another day.
But that seems to be the way it goes, right? Like Mayweather met Pacquiao 10 years too late.
Yeah.
And now it's Tiger versus Phil. And
I'd like to see a playoff series with Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid.
That's true.
Yeah.
Not going to happen anytime soon.
How would you handicap the chances of that happening in the next 5 years, Craig?
Low.
Yeah?
Really low.
I think Matthews might be able to pull his weight.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not worried about Austin. And, hey, it's not about Connor not pulling on the rope.
No.
It's that, like, there's a rope with not very many players that can pull it.
So what's up here, Craig?
With what?
Tell us about your reaction to Todd McClellan out, Ken Hitchcock in. How do you feel about this move in Edmonton?
Quite frankly, straightforward. I think the focus should be on the manager and on the manager's office, not on the coach. So you make a coaching change, okay, that's what you do. And so, you know what? That's for the people above Peter Chiarelli. That's who it's for. Why are they not saying, wait a second here, we ended up, I mean, I heard all the things, we owe it to our fans. Yeah, you do owe it to your fans. And you know what? Don't tell me that your team's good enough to win, right? And at the same time say, well, we all should be accountable for where our team is at. Wait a sec. If you think your team's good enough to win and you're making a coach, then say that.
Right. Blame the coach.
You know what? Say, hey, listen, I think this team's much better than it's performing. I think we have a coaching issue and we're going to make a change. And that doesn't mean that you can't do that. Or, you know what? It's on me. But to sit on both things, he's just sitting on the fence.
Right.
To me, he was gifted Connor McDavid.
That's right.
Gifted him.
First thing he got when he was hired, they won the lottery.
Well, he wasn't even hired.
They had won the lottery.
They won the lottery.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
He wasn't even hired. He was gifted, and all he's done is traded more skill for less skill.
Yep.
The team that exists today is his handiwork, and it's not very good.
If you were the general manager, is it like if you were going to be honest with the assessment of the team, would you kind of have to do like a bit of a teardown around Connor McDavid, or are you going to keep bluffing this to say that this is a good enough lineup? What is the appropriate action?
Jeff, I think you've nailed it. Right. Okay. So why don't we go back and look at Brendan Shanahan. And I think Brendan Shanahan's a really good example here. He came in, he looked at a team, right, and he said, and he spent a year watching the team and evaluating. He said, you know what, we can't get to where we want to get to. And so we moved to start to say, these are the moves we got to make. I think the same exact thing has to happen in Edmonton. Yeah, but you can't trade Taylor Hall for less skill, and you can't trade Jordan Eberle for less skill. And that's where I say you got to go above the manager. The manager's not going to fire himself. I get it. But who are the people evaluating there?
Well, I guess it starts at the top, and the owner has been a mess.
But we're talking a little bit off air, but that was my, and I even said that, I think, to Ray in the 5 o'clock hour, like, you know, there's a lot of blood on people's hands here with what's going on. The manager has to own this, but all you hear, again, I can't confirm, but it's from above the manager, and you've got the boys on the bus. You've got, I don't know how much Kevin Lowe is involved.
The fact
anymore.
That Kevin Lowe is still involved,
you know, and there's
though,
guys that are
shocking.
Still kicking
ludicrous.
Around. You got Rhett's involved, but I think that's more of a figurehead situation. But then, you know, Nicholson was brought in, and then the owner, who, you know, he's super successful in another business, not as an owner in the NHL. I mean, I'm sure he makes a ton of money, but he should delegate and stay out of it. And all you hear is potentially he's got his fingers on stuff. So, you know, how much blood or how much guilt is it has to be delegated here?
Well, I mean, I think lots of it. And, you know, it's the same thing that you talk about Wayne. So, you know, Wayne came in to coach in Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
And he was a better coach at the end of 4 years than he was when he started, right? Like he was, because he learned. He learned how to do the job. He learned where he was at and everything, right? So Bob Nicholson comes in from Hockey Canada into the NHL. He's never been part of the NHL, so he's learning on the job. But you're 4 years into the job now. So now Bob, in my view, as the chairman or the vice chairman, whatever, he's the head dog. This is where it's going to start. It's going to start right with him in evaluating how do we move forward here. We got a great player. We have a great market. We have a great new building here. So now you're 4 years in. You now have to start. I understand there was a learning curve for Bob at the NHL level. But to your point, that's where the decisions have to start to be made. He hired Peter Chiarelli. Like, I don't know how Peter Chiarelli can talk about making moves. They don't have skill in their forward group after the first three guys. What teams are giving up skilled players that can skate? Oh, yeah, defensemen that can move the puck and make a play. What teams are giving them up? Yeah. And goaltending? So, Jeff, back to your question, segueing back to you. Okay, so where do you begin?
I don't even know. I can't even imagine. I know that when Brendan Shanahan showed up here, he must have looked and said, I got a tough job ahead here, and some things have to fall in place. But if I took the job, I would just be looking and saying, there's a lot I got to fix. I got to make some things go away. I mean, me and Jamie were talking. What are you going to do? I don't think Milan Lucic, he might get better. He might have a 15-goal season. He might have a 10. But he's never going to provide you value for the number.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you ultimately do with him. Do you just let him sit there and play his game out and be a role player?
I think you do one of two things, and I don't think you can do anything in between. You either buy him out and say it's over, right? Or you accept that you're paying him and he is a role player. There's no in between.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, there's no in between.
That's a good point.
Okay, so this idea that he's going to be a 20 goal scorer, and in fairness to Milan, and I want to be fair to Milan here real quick. He is a competitor.
Yes.
He always was a great competitor. The game now is at a stage where it's harder for him to impact the game where it's at. That's just reality, okay? I'm not going to beat up on Milan Lucic because he does. He is going to be in there to help you. But he can't do it at the same point now. So to me, one or the other. You either say, you're no longer part of it, we buy you out, or we're going to accept you as a role player.
When you were on we're just going over like Gibby's email today of the transactions. When you were at the draft, and the Edmonton Oilers gave up a first and a second for Griffin Reinhardt. You would have been there. Were you not thinking to yourself, what's going on here? Or did you think that's a great shot in the dark?
No, not at all. There was a couple things. So number one, that was the year they won the McDavid sweepstakes.
Exactly.
So you got McDavid one. So my own view on it was that was exactly the point where they needed to draft the goaltender. And guess what? There was a goaltender available, Ilya Samsonov, who was an outstanding Russian goalie.
He was the best goalie outside the NHL.
Staring him right in the face, right at pick 16. You could talk about Barzal or Besser.
He ended up going 31st to Washington, didn't he?
No, he went 22 or 23, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I thought. So now you get your franchise. You just get the goaltender in the system, let him grow. Just like, you know, we'll have him here in a few years when he's ready. Yeah. Well, what do they need now? Well, a young goaltender, right?
Yeah.
And then they trade the early pick in the second round.
That was the 31st overall pick,
too. That's it's terrible.
Yeah.
And so why did that happen? I'll tell you why it happened. Because they go into the draft with inexperienced people that don't have the confidence to run the draft. So Bob Green, who's the director of amateur scouting, that still is, right? And that's not a knock. Bob works hard, but he was also the general manager of the Edmonton Oil Kings when Griffin Reinhardt was the captain that won the Memorial Cup.
Get my guy.
Bit of bias there. Yeah.
But you put Bob into a position where, you know, he's learning scouting in the NHL, but he's got a real comfort level with Griffin Reinhardt. I get it. But that's how it happens.
Well, I mean, you look at the Oilers and...
I know, Jeff. That's exactly right.
It was just, it always comes back to McDavid because even if they have to rebuild, retool, whatever, they're still starting in a very opportune position. Like, yeah, they've got the best player in the world.
He's
21
goose.
Years old.
Well, here's the question.
He's locked in.
At what point, what kind of time frame, this guy's going to be watching... The Leafs are good, and other young players are good, and he's going to be saying...
Buffalo coming along.
Buffalo, and I'm doing this. Is there ever a timeline where he would say, no thanks? Like, is it 3 years from now? Is it?
Are you saying demand a trade, or storm in and say, everything's got to change around here? I think he's entitled to that at the end of the year. Like, they're, outside of the owner, he's the most powerful person in the organization. He can storm in and be like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I'm not putting up with that. I know that doesn't fit the narrative.
I don't think he's that kind of kid that would weep into somebody's office and say, I'm not putting up.
I understand that, but I'm saying he could if he wanted to. I know that's not conducive with the hockey culture, but in other sports, like we talk about LeBron and the power of LeBron, that's McDavid if he wants to.
It is.
McDavid could, like, if he goes to, calls up Daryl Cates and goes, lunch, 12 o'clock, Daryl Cates better be there because this guy is the most, outside of the owner, the most powerful player in the organization.
Well, I'll give you an example, and you know, and the second one is a lesser one. But we're in Minnesota, Dallas, and we have Mike Modano. And we've drafted some younger players, but our team has moved now. We're not a very good team, right? And so now you're trying to look, and you're thinking you got this great player in Mike Modano. You got some other good young players. Everybody's talking about their young players, right? But we have Mike Modano. And we got Bob Gainey as our general manager and coach. Massive credibility. We're sitting there trying to think about, okay, we got to improve our team. We drafted Jerome Iginla, right? We knew that Jerome was going to be a really good player. Did we think he was going to be the Hall of Famer? No, I'd be no way we did.
Right.
But we thought we knew, and that's how we got Jerome. But a big part of that was making sure that we kept the credibility of Mike Modano and those players. That's why we went and got Joe Nieuwendyk. That's why we made a push to trade for Sergei Zubov, a Stanley Cup champion. You tried to bring in some older players like the Guy Carbonneaus and the Craig Ludwigs, and ultimately, because you don't want to lose the credibility of your best players. So I think for the Edmonton Oilers, and when I was in Calgary just on a lesser one, that's what, as a manager, that's how I felt. That's what you got to show Jerome. That's what you got to show the best players. Listen, we're moving forward. We are. But you got to show them that.
Right.
You can't tell them that. You got to show them that. And I think that's where the Edmonton Oilers are at with Connor McDavid. It's not that he's going to just say, oh, my God, what's happening? But you better show him some tangible evidence that you're moving in the right direction and he has a chance to win because he's a competitor.
Yes.
And if you don't show him that, you're losing. You will lose credibility with him, and that's where it starts to really start to splinter.
That's where he says, "Get me the hell out of here."
That's potentially right.
Craig Button in studio. The Leafs with the definition of a character win last night. They're coming back from California. All these built-in excuses. They're down 2-0 after the first, and Freddie Anderson played really, really well. Obviously. But I was looking up some stats before the show today. They are fourth in the league in goals for per game, fourth in the league in goals against.
Uh-huh.
And I think another thing that really sticks out, obviously Freddie Anderson factors in a lot to the fourth in goals against, but they are the least penalized team in the league by a substantial amount. So they're not allowing for power play opportunities for the opposition. Last night was the first time in years neither team had a power play. And yes, they're not a big physical team, but they're disciplined. You know, they don't allow for their lack of size or lack of grit and pugnacity or whatever to trigger some sort of a reaction where they're looking for scrums or they feel like they need to use their stick to get back at guys. And that's Babcock. And Babcock, he's got some old school in him. He likes the size, and he's pointed to that too. But I got to say, this Leaf team right now, without Matthews, and obviously Nylander has not played a game, you look at these stats and the amount of wins that they're racking up and the way that they're playing. They're a well-oiled machine.
And it's goofy to say, but they're probably thinking, man, it's going to be a weird transition if both of those guys come back because they're rolling right
well,
now.
They have to.
And as good as they are, everybody would welcome them back in 10 seconds, but they're going to say, we're probably going to go through a couple game stretch where there's an adjustment and other guys take nights off because they're coming back.
But it'll
and
just,
then you got a problem. Then you're thinking, what happened? We were rolling.
They can afford that though, right? Because they bank these points.
Yeah. You're right.
It's the trickle down too. Like the power play may just look a little bit different,
Yeah. Like a guy like Kasperi Kapanen who's been so effective, he's going to be like, okay, Nylander, go do your thing.
Nazem gets pushed around a little bit. Like that's the you're gonna the I believe. Babcock will just have to massage a few things, massage some egos, massage some of the players who have elevated and played very well in the absence of these two players.
All kidding aside, Mike doesn't give massages.
No, you're right. I can't see
that. No, I'm joking.
Wrong verbiage, but you're right.
Like I know what you mean. He's going to have to manage
he's
it.
He's going to manage creative.
Yeah, you got to manage it. You got to push Kadri to the wing a little bit, give him some minutes, or get him on the power play somewhere where if he's not going to be.
But he was going to be the interesting play. if both of those guys come back. Because William Nylander's probably thinking, I'll sign, but where the hell am I? What am I going to get 12 seconds a night on the power play? Because if I'm not on that unit, it's Kadri or Nylander. One of them's going to get bumped off it, depending on probably who's going or what look they want. Well, I don't know.
Did that ever happen to you, Jeff, where you know you're an offensive player, you get some players ahead of you for different reasons?
Craig, I played in Carolina. We were never deep enough for that.
But how about Kadri? See, Kadri to me is the fly in the ointment. And I don't use that in a negative way.
Yeah, we had an opening in the Leaf game on the panel, and they said, what's one thing you think you've learned from 20 games? And mine was, I don't think Nazem Kadri is the third-line centerman.
Yeah. That's what I agree.
Look at the production. Look at his involvement. He's got skin in the game. He's agitating people. And then if you bump him down to the third line, he's just like a...
Well, and you're playing with different players.
That's the challenge. You're not engaged as much as you should.
And I've liked that third line. I've liked Connor Brown, Lindholm, and Andreas Janssen.
They've been good.
Like, I think they've really given them. Like, so it's just interesting. I asked the question, though, and maybe you're right, you didn't have enough depth. But, you know, the fact that Nazem, you know, I call him the Nazarator now because he's an irritator. And he's in it. Skin in the game. It's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But he, to me, is the... That's where he might have to have where Mike's greatest managing
the manipulation of the roster,
massaging.
Basically. Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. Because
he might have to massage that. Yeah.
He's an emotional guy too. Like he did not have a fun night last night. He was flustered the whole night.
You could tell.
But he's constantly waiting to get back on the ice. Like that's he gets to the bench and he's waiting to get back on.
Yeah.
Like
he loves playing. He loves competing.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I don't think he necessarily has to downgrade the players he's playing with. I think that line will stay intact. Because we're talking about two-thirds of the top line. Matthews and Nylander will step in, and they play together. I think Kapanen and Kadri and Marleau stay together. I think that's your third line. I think Brown, Janssen, and Lindholm become your fourth line.
Well, let me
some sort of combination.
So
someone has to play
this,
on the wing. But.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't it be nice for the Leafs keep the top line the Tavares line together, keep the Kadri line together, right? Keep that other line together, and now find a left winger, put Kapanen over on the left side with Matthews and Nylander.
Exactly. Or Janssen or something. Yeah.
But I like the Janssen Lindholm. Connor Brown line.
They've been starting to settle in. You can see that they're getting more comfortable.
What would four lines like that look like?
I agree with you, Jeff.
It's tough to compete against because you got a balanced lineup that can in a playoff series. You talk about Sidney Crosby was on Leafs lunch. He talked about depth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We were talking about the D. How everyone's saying, "Oh, the D is good enough," and we were saying yesterday. I said, you can't go and get a Doughty. But if they can make a transaction and just acquire like a Niskanen type guy who's a secondary guy, but he's just a really good player, goes out and does really good things, can play in a second power play unit, tough to play against, moves the puck. If they could ever find that somehow, you see what happens.
Well, Jeff, you nailed it because you're not getting Doughty. It's a pipe dream, right? But like what Jim Rutherford didn't get in Trevor Daley, right? Like, I mean, that was a really, really good, shrewd move, right?
Yeah,
like,
a good veteran player,
pressure.
Quality player.
Yeah. It takes pressure off Hainsey and it probably would slot, you know, that right side a lot better.
Yeah, Hainsey would move down, I would think.
Yes.
All right, Craig. Good seeing you, man.
Yeah, good to see you guys, too.
Thanks for popping in studio. This is Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst. We've got an update on Kyle Lowry's availability tonight. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. We'll do that next. All right, Raptors in Orlando tonight. Kyle Lowry will play. I got to give credit to this guy because when he left the game in Chicago, I thought it was scary. Like it was a non-contact.
Went down in the hallway.
Yeah.
It looked like he could have been out for a long time.
And that Leo Routens is down in Florida. Does he love a tan?
He can post a selfie with the best of them.
He loves a motivational coffee tweet and a tweet of him tanning.
And an emoji.
He loves an emoji.
Loves an emoji.
Got the fist pump and the thumbs up.
I'm surprised at grown-ass men that love... Even Bobby Mack likes an emoji.
I try to avoid the emoji as much as possible.
I throw the odd, like, guy going like this.
I like
this.
The thumbs up.
Yeah, I'll do a thumbs up. It's my way of saying that's the end of the conversation.
Exactly.
Thumbs up. Like, yeah. I'm not texting back and forth anymore. It's over.
Yeah, we're done here.
I never told you guys. I know you know this, Noodles, but
yes.
I tried to play Big Wheel in the Starbucks drive-thru today, and Steph just sewered me. She was right behind me.
And you tried to do buy her a coffee?
Bobby Big Wheel. I get up there. I go, I'll take care of the woman behind me, too.
You had no money.
No, I had money. But it was 2:30 in the afternoon. I thought she's going to get a coffee. You know, it's 2:30. I'm like, she's going to get like a blonde roast or something. I'm like, I'll pick up the blonde roast. Woman rings it up. She goes, that's about $13. She got a panini, like a $5 orange juice.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. And by then, I had already made the move. Like, I'm Joe Cool.
So you can't bail
out
of it.
Yeah, okay. I get the plastic out. Like, I had change. I was just going to give him change.
You're going to put $4 down and drive away. It's like $14 because she's being a hero.
I would have said, actually, just my own.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can make that move. Once you play Bobby Big Wheel.
I would have backed out of it and said, what the hell's this lady buying?
I just... At 2:30 in the afternoon, I'm like, I thought you had lunch 2 hours ago. What are you buying a panini for at this point?
I was laughing when I heard that because it's just...
Such a Big Wheel move.
But did she know that she was... Like, she didn't know that you were buying,
No. She had nothing... She did no wrongdoing.
I could see her, like, doubling down. Oh, well, throw in some banana bread, too.
I was
cake pop for
that.
The kid.
Yeah. Something for later, maybe for tomorrow, but... Yeah. Anyway, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Raptors tonight, laying the points in Orlando. I will take the Clippers in Washington, and Miami bounces back against Brooklyn tonight at home. Throw down 20, you can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. Noodles, you're out of here, I believe, for the rest of the week,
right? Yeah, I've got L.A. tomorrow and then Dallas.
You're going to L.A. tomorrow?
Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
Love it.
Thanks. I'll be in L.A. at the game tomorrow night, actually.
All right.
L.A., Colorado.
Okay.
And then Dallas and Ottawa on Friday. I'll be back here Saturday morning.
All right, man.
Breaking down some big Leaf games.
You know it.
You know what? Me and Hayes, we're going to be back.
At 4 p.m. tomorrow afternoon.
With Jonas?
Dutchie, I believe, will be.
Wow.
The Dutch master.
The Dutch.
Get ready. Get the horn ready or whatever, the bleep.
We'll be ready.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
we're out
Noodles
here.
Is back for Monday.
We'll chat then.